thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of Band Biographies. You can find more episodes at bandbiographies.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-D biographies.com. If you enjoy it, why not leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts? Apparently, it helps get the show up the charts so more people can see it, to download it, and then to leave further 5-star reviews. Another way you can help is by telling as many friends as possible to give it a download. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, on Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. But most of all, enjoy. Hello and welcome back to the Band Biographies podcast, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network of music-based podcasts, where there's a podcast for whatever kind of music you're into. Check them all out at pantheon.com. On this episode, I chat to Brompton Jackson, guitarist with Chicago bands Wilmette, Knockout Kid, and Action Adventure. Specifically, we focus on Wilmette for this episode, as he's the newest member of that particular group, and they're releasing their long-awaited debut full-length album called Hyper Focused on the 4th of August 2023 via Mutant League Records. The new album was produced by Seth Henderson of the bands State Champs and Knuckle Puck, and is the follow-up to Wilmette's 2019 debut EP, Anxious Body. In this conversation, we talk about the making of the album, how he handled joining a band during the pandemic, and how someone in as many touring bands as Brompton is manages it all. You can follow Wilmette on all the social platforms at Wilmette Band, and you can listen to or watch them wherever you get your music. The album's out now, so make sure you check it out. But without further ado, here's my chat with Brompton Jackson. Brompton Jackson, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thanks for being here, man. First off, I just wanted to say, like, that's a name and a half, Brompton Jackson. I mean, where? It sounds like a superhero or something.
I mean, I don't know about superhero, but it's definitely not normal, I guess.
Where does it come from? Do you know?
So Brompton is my grandpa's middle name. I know that it's British in origin, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, because I think, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out Brompton. I think it's a place here, as far as I know.
There's a place there. There's a place in Canada. There's a street here in Chicago, but
it's a make a fold up bike.
that is also true. Those are actually pretty cool.
Yeah, they help you get around. Although it's not quite as cool as electric scooters, apparently. If you talk to any of the kids around here,
I mean that's fair. It does seem like it's a little bit more than just kind of hopping on a scooter and going. So
yeah,
and I mean they're like when you fold them up, they're like this.
They're still big. Pretty chunky. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago it was a better option, but now, you know, the scooter's probably the way to go.
Yeah. And before we get into kind of Wilmette and the album, Hyper Focused and that kind of thing, I just like to always ask my guests a few kind of getting to know you questions, because it's the first time we've spoken.
For sure.
So, yeah, some of the ones that I just like to always kind of undercut any kind of street cred, any kind of punk credibilities or whatever, is what's the first album or single that you bought with your own money?
Oh, okay. It was actually I was in sixth grade. It was Newfound Glory's self-titled CD. It was okay. That was the first thing that I ever bought. That was actually the first piece of music that I ever bought.
Wow.
With my own money. Yeah, that was wild.
That's not bad. I still like Newfound Glory now. They were one of the gateway bands for me into pop punk.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're still doing it, which is crazy.
Mm.
They're awesome. They're a great band. They're also awesome people, so that's really cool as well.
Have you met them then?
Yes, my other band, we played like six shows with them last year, so they were great people. Very like super kind, treated us with like the utmost respect, so it's pretty awesome.
It's always great when you kind of, because people say never meet your heroes or whatever, but I've actually found that most musicians that I look up to, the who I've met, which isn't that many, but it's a few, turn out to be quite nice people.
Yeah, I mean, I've also luckily had that pretty much be the case as well. So that, I'm lucky. I do feel like, every time I meet somebody that I look up to or, respect in like a certain way, especially in music, it's always kind of like a, man, I hope this person's not a dick or, whatever. And then so far, I got a pretty good track record, so knock on wood, let's we're gonna try and keep that going.
So you've not had any bad experiences per se. You don't have to name anyone, of course, but
No bad experiences yet. Everybody's been super, super cool, really, really awesome, super respectful, very nice. Some of them are just my friends now, which is kind of weird. So that, I mean, it's just really, it's just honestly like super surprising, but really cool.
And so, when did you start playing music, and was it always guitar for you, or did you start on kind of more traditional instruments and then worked your way to the electric stuff?
So, like back in the day, oddly enough, around the time when I got that record, I ended up getting a guitar. My uncle gave me a guitar. My uncle's been playing for years, and he kind of gave me a guitar to try and get me into it. And I messed around with it, and it was okay. It didn't like click like super well. And then I ended up like being in band and playing saxophone for like 2 or 3 years. But then and like during that time, I don't know, I like it just I kind of really just wanted to play guitar, and I wasn't very good. I'm still not that good, but I really just it wasn't clicking. And I just remember like trying like stopping and starting like a bunch of times, and probably in like late 7th grade or 8th grade, it just kind of like I got it, for lack of a better term, it clicked. And then I stopped playing saxophone, and pretty much just started focusing more so on guitar. And then I started playing a lot. I started playing a lot in high school. I met a couple of friends, and we started just like learning covers and stuff. We actually started playing like Senses Fail covers and stuff like sophomore year of high school. And then, two of us are still in another band today. So that's pretty crazy.
That is pretty crazy, because I assume you're not far off my age, I would imagine. I'm 38, so I would imagine
No,
you're in
I'm
your
gonna be I'm like 33. I'm gonna be 34 this year, so.
So that's cool that you're still in a band with one of your high school buddies,
Two of them.
two of them,
Two of them.
two of them,
Yep. It's
because
pretty
you're
crazy.
in a couple of bands, right? It's not just Wilmette. It's I'm trying to find my notes here. I did look it up and
Yeah.
write them down. Action Adventure and Knockout Kids. So which band is that with the high school buddies?
Action Adventure. Yeah, we've
Okay.
been doing it for, I mean, that project is like 10 years old, but we've been like the three of us have been playing together for just under 18 years now. So it's pretty crazy. Not normal. We're super lucky, so that's pretty cool.
And do all three bands kind of go out on tour, or some of them at different levels of playing gigs?
So there was a point in time where Everyone was super active. Knockout Kid is a lot of people. There were some babies that were had. There were some marriages that had happened. So it takes us a lot longer to do things now. But we still like have music coming and stuff, so that's really cool. New music like later this year. So like the two that are most active for sure are Action and Wilmette, definitely. I literally was on tour with Action from April 1st to May 29th of this
Oh,
year.
wow.
I was gone, so
Wow.
I can't we came home and I came home for a week, shot three Wilmette music videos, and then went back and finished the rest of the tour. And so yeah, it's pretty busy, but it's cool. I like to stay busy, and it's awesome. I always say that I get to play music with 12 of my best friends, so it's pretty cool
That
between
is
all three
cool.
bands.
And just around the US, or do you go into Canada or anything like that?
We usually do like US and Canada. The April tour only had one Canada date, but the rest was a full US. We've been to a few places in like Eastern Canada, which is pretty cool. Never been over to Europe or the UK or Asia yet, but hopefully, that'll happen next year. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, fingers crossed, man. Yeah, definitely. So, you said that your, sorry, did you say your father or your grandfather gave you the saxophone?
So that was just kind of like a school thing.
Oh, okay.
But my uncle gave me a guitar.
Uncle, sorry.
Yes. No, no worries.
So yeah, when your uncle gave you the guitar, I mean, is your family a musical family, or is this like a completely new thing for you guys? Like, was there anyone who was making music in the past?
It was kind of mostly my uncle is a musician. I think we're like the only two people who really kind of stuck with it, like through like just past like doing it in like school for like band or whatever.
Okay. And what does he do? I mean, is he a guitarist as well, or?
Yeah, he's a guitarist. He plays a lot of like R&B and funk and blues and stuff like that. So not the same genre, but oddly kind of, if you think about it, kind of similar things. But
All developed from the same kind of root area, I suppose. So has it always been kind of pop punk and punk rock for you?
I mean, yeah, in high school, everybody goes through like that metalcore phase. Honestly, like most of the time, what I listen to is more of like a metalcore, like current metalcore. I also listen to a lot of the same stuff that I listened to, when I was in high school. So there's a lot of that going on, that whole nostalgia trip
Well, I
that
think
everyone's always on.
music, especially when you find it at between the ages of like 13 and 18, something like that, I feel like that's when your brain is at its most plastic. And like anything that you listen to at that age gets kind of imprinted in your brain, and it's kind of in your DNA. You know, like your favorite
Yeah.
bands will always be your favorite bands from that point in your life. Because that's when it was still, exciting.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. That's not to say that like there's not a lot of new exciting music coming out all the time, but the bands from from back then, they definitely are still, like you said, just kind of like stamped or imprinted into into everything. So
I
I
find
definitely get
myself listening to a lot of like Bad Religion, Anti-Flag,
yeah,
Blink-182,
that's
Newfound Glory, you know, all that kind of stuff is like
absolutely.
what I came up on, basically.
Definitely.
And as much as I like to try and keep current about what's out there and stuff, it's just always there's a few albums that I'll always go back to, like Empire Strikes First by Bad Religion, or Enema of the State by Blink-182 was the first one of their albums that I bought, and so it's always going to be my favorite.
Anima was probably like record like three. or four that I bought.
Yeah, because I suppose that first Newfound Glory one was around about 1999, 2000 as well, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
and it was like all of that in that. So like Newfound Glory, Blink, Mest, like Old Good Charlotte, like all of that stuff,
Yeah.
that era. Yeah,
So
so I was.
were you seeing these bands live as well? Like, who was the first band that you saw live, or one of the best bands that you've seen live anyway?
Yes, I have seen all of those bands that I just said live. I've seen Blink play in like a 400 cap room,
Wow.
500 cap room, back when like Take Off Your Pants and Jacket came out. Like I saw them tour for that record. So that was like super cool, especially like versus where they're at right now,
Yeah.
playing like literal stadiums and arenas and stuff. So
Yeah.
that, that's pretty cool. But man, the first bit, actually one of the first like rock concerts I ever went to was I saw Alien Ant Farm, and
Nice.
another like really good but also random, that record,
People gave them shit, but they were that first album was brilliant. I loved it.
it's so good. It was so good. I remember just like going to the show and being like, oh, this is crazy, this is like really cool. I've been going to shows ever since, and now I play a lot of shows, which is pretty cool.
A hell of a lot. Yeah. So, when you said earlier on that guitar clicked for you at a certain point, was it when you were playing along to the other people's music, or was it like a teacher made you like get something about their method clicked for you?
So I think that like I don't know, I was maybe weird or stubborn or something, but like lessons never worked. Like I never really got past playing like just the Green Day songs that we went over and learned, and so there's like no theory in here. Like I am just so bad at music theory, and like because I'm 96% self-taught, I have a lot of bad playing habits that as as an adult, I now work very hard to try and unlearn and relearn, which is really frustrating because I already know how to do certain things a certain way, but I want to be able to do it more efficiently.
I
But
completely.
it was mostly just like playing along and learning like other people's songs. I would say it was like the era of like just tabs being on the internet, and like kids now are super lucky because they have YouTube. Like I was already playing when YouTube kind of exploded with like internet guitar players,
Yeah.
so I didn't really have I didn't really have the Tim Hensons of the world to teach me like hybrid and economy picking and tapping and all that cool stuff.
That was the thing
But
about tabs, isn't it? Like, you've got the tab and it's laid out. Because I grew up with the same thing, just tabs, but it doesn't tell you how fast to play it, and it doesn't necessarily teach you the intervals between the notes. And so you
right.
kind of like you're trying to play it and you're like, I can't figure out how he's going from there to there. And oh, but yeah, if we'd had the video back in the early 2000s, it would have been much easier.
Man, if I had YouTube guitarists to teach me how to play guitar, then I feel like I would be a lot better at guitar than I am right now.
Yeah.
Like just straight up, I feel like I'd be a lot better than I am right now.
No, but I mean,
Definitely.
it's the same story for me as well. I play bass in a few bands, and the only reason I play bass is because I didn't want to learn chords.
Yeah, sometimes my hand just doesn't want to do certain chords, and it's occasionally a struggle to unlearn those habits.
Yeah,
So
that's it.
that is
That's
a that's a thing for sure. That's a real thing.
taking shortcuts doesn't always pay off.
It does not. It did back in the day, and now I'm like, God damn it, now I gotta like go back and learn things.
Especially when you start playing in bands with people who know their stuff and actually do know the theory, it shows up your
Yeah.
kind of like your
Or
shortcuts.
even just like people who play differently. Griffin and I are two completely different guitarists. Like we just play very differently, which is really cool.
Griffin from Wilmette, isn't it?
Yeah. Griffin and I are very different, which is cool because a lot of times there will be like a Griffin will be like, "Hey, can you like put a lead on this or something or whatever?" And it's cool because like there's little there are just little things all over the place that's like that. Well, at least when I'm listening to it, it's like that's very Griffin, or that's like very me. So like when other people listen to it, specifically my other bandmates, when I show them songs, they're like, "Oh, you wrote that part," or "Oh, you did that. That's not a Griffin part," So there's a lot of that. But that being said, Griffin is like a machine, and he writes very quickly, and he writes in ways that my hands aren't used to playing. And so like it's literally like whenever I practice for shows, it's like straight up like a stamina thing, like trying to get my hand into these weird chord shapes sometimes and like stretching to make sure that it works. It's crazy sometimes.
Because I mean, I'm also in three bands as well, some of them more active than others. And I've always found that playing with different people makes you a more rounded player anyway. Like, I've got better since playing with a bunch of other people in slightly different styles. I mean, how have you found that? Obviously, there's a bit of a difference there with the Wilmette guitarist, but how do you compartmentalize songs being written from one band to the other?
I feel like there's a lot of the three bands kind of have different vibes to them. So it all kind of depends like what riff is what. And then like I said, specifically in Wilmette, my job is a little easier because Griffin writes so fast and it's all very good. So a lot of times Griffin will bring the majority of something and I'm like, "Cool. That's awesome. Let's go.
You
This is great."
just add your flavor to it.
Yeah, and then I wrote like all the bass on the last two records too, so that was cool.
All right, okay. Because you're the latest member of Wilmette, right?
No, actually, we do also have a new bassist now. We were
Okay.
we operated as a four piece for pretty much since COVID and since I joined, but we do have a bassist now, Ben. He's awesome. So, that's cool. But yeah, I guess I would have been the newest member joining back in 20, very early 2020, like right before COVID, and then COVID hit.
So you were just kind of bedding into this new band, and then all of a sudden that was it for months, right? So
Yeah.
did that kind of affect the way that you and the rest of the band kind of got to know each other?
No, so I actually like knew this is so like the history with the band and me is just such like a weird like interwoven thing. I was like really good friends with Peyton, our old bassist, and they needed okay, so it's like I said, it's complicated. So I was really good friends with Peyton, Wilmette's old bassist. And for a little while, Action Adventure had a bassist named Alex, and he joined Wilmette. This was in like late 2018 to 2019. So me and Peyton shared a bandmate. Like Alex was in both bands. And then Alex ended up leaving both bands, and Griffin replaced Alex. And then, like, maybe 9 months later, Gage, the other guitarist, was like, he decided that he needed to leave, And Peyton was like, "Hey, do you wanna play with us?" And I was like, "Oh, for sure, that's cool." And then that's how I joined Wilmette, through Peyton and then through my old bassist, Alex. It's like a real, there's steps. We'll get there, but it definitely took a second to get there.
Yeah, when you look back, it's all leading towards that point, but it's one of those kind of zigzagging routes.
Yeah, definitely a winding road for sure.
So do all the bands kind of are they all from the same kind of city or area then?
I mean, yeah, we're all from Chicago or the Chicagoland area. I mean, Action is from the city. We all live like in the city. Wilmette is pretty much from like the northwest suburbs. So everybody's like 45 minutes out of the city, and Knockout Kid, everyone, three of us are in the city. One of us is in the western suburbs, like 40 minutes just west, not northwest. And then our bassist Brian lives in New York. So that one's a little interesting. But Brian's great. He flies in whenever we need to do stuff, and it's cool.
And I suppose the advantage now is that you can do a lot of stuff remotely anyway, so like you don't need to be
True.
there the whole time, but
Yeah, any meetings or anything, we're good. And then obviously he could practice on his own. And then if we have a show or something, he'll fly in and he'll do it. We'll practice for like 2 days before the show with him. Like all of us will practice, and then he'll practice, and then he'll fly in a couple of days early. And we'll normally have a practice that's like 5 hours long, and we just like jam and work it out. And the chemistry's still there, so it's not like a huge disadvantage. We're typically good enough for the show. Good, I say good enough because like it would be, I will admit, it would be cool. It would be better if like we all lived here and we were able to get together like every week and practice, but it's cool.
Yeah. And what's the Chicago kind of punk scene like? Because I've read through countless books of, autobiographies and whatever. And Chicago always seemed to have quite a good kind of underground kind of basement punk scene. Is that still a thriving scene there?
Yeah, I think our scene is huge. There's like a huge DIY scene in the city, which is really cool. And then there's also just like in general, like a really good local pop punk scene, and like tons of other bands are like from here. There's like there's just there's li literally so many, and a lot, and it's weird because a lot of my friends are in like good bands that do things, and so we're lucky to have such a good scene here. It's also like, I will say, I feel like there's an oversaturation issue where it's hard for bands to break out because there's so many good bands that it's like there's no, it's hard to be like the best local band when there are so many good local bands.
Like any other city, you could stand out a little bit better. But I suppose maybe there's something to that in that there's a saying, isn't there? Like a rising tide lifts all ships. So like
Yeah.
when you get out of Chicago, you're better than anyone else in any other city. So
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I never really thought about it like that, but sure, I could see that. I mean,
always thinking
I'm not,
positive.
yeah. I wouldn't say like straight up better.
No.
But definitely, having to play as many shows here before, starting to go out and tour and stuff, like it's just made it very, it's an easier transition, I could say.
And so how challenging is organizing gigs around tours, for example? Like you say, you were just out doing a month and a half, 2 months with one band. Is it all about, trying to come up, like I assume no two bands are ever on tour at the same time.
So, yeah, I mean, it literally, people are always like, well, you know, which band do you like more? And I'm like, that's not a, I don't like any band more. Like, I'm obviously in them all because I like being in them, and you know, I like the people that I'm in them with a lot. You know, it's really just like I want to be able to hang out with my friends and play as much music as possible. So I did it three times instead of one time, which arguably sometimes people are like, that's stupid. But I, and you know, I'm like, whatever, it's fine. We make it work. But you know, that's not to say that it's not always a challenge. Like, you know, I was gone for all of April and May, and we had to shoot those videos because we had to, you know, do this record rollout. So we had to shoot three videos in 3 days in a period of time when I was home. So honestly, if anything, it's made me appreciate my bandmates more because everyone is like really understanding and very flexible and really willing to work around my schedule with the other bands. I've flown home like on off days to play other shows with other bands and then flown back out the next morning and like rejoined the tour. So it's a very busy, like my schedule is very like Tetris-y, you know? It's funny that you actually say that because like we're, you know, obviously we're gonna like Wilmette's gonna want to do like some touring and stuff to support this record. And yesterday, you know, Action announced that we're doing the 10-year anniversary tour for The Greatest Generation with the Wonder Years. So we're on that whole tour. So that's like September 9th to October 22nd. So like, so you know, I'm gonna be gone for like 7 weeks again at the, you know, in the fall. So, you know, it's very like we are gonna do our best to like work everything around that, you know, do some shows in August and then do some shows in November. There are a couple of off day blocks that are, you know, in the like 2 day blocks that are, you know, off days in the in that Wonder Years tour. So, you know, maybe like if we have a show at home or something, like I'll fly home and like play that show and you know, then fly back out and stuff like that. We also have a really good friend, Eric, who you know, in a pinch, you know, if I can't be there, he's always willing to like fill in for me, which is awesome. Either me or Ben will play guitar and then Eric will fill in on bass. Like we have just kind of like a rotating thing. Which, and you know, again, like I said, the you know, everybody else in Wilmette is like super supportive and really understanding. So
Oh, that's cool.
it's
I mean, it sounds like you're going to be a busy guy up until the end of the year, basically.
yeah, I mean, I it's definitely this is definitely the busiest year of my life. For sure. So,
And
but I, you know, I like to stay busy.
well, busy is better than not, right?
Oh, absolutely. Especially after COVID and not being able to play shows.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, is music the thing that you do full time, or do you have like a, you know, a part-time side hustle-y thing as well?
So, you know, I do have like a regular job, which is really cool because I, you know, I work remote. We because we work remote, I'm able to work when I'm on tour still. So blessing and a curse, definitely a blessing and a curse because I get up and you know I'll probably work at like somewhere between 8 and 10 so that I can get off of work at like sometime between 4 and 6, be ready for load in, you know, load in, sound check. Hang out for the rest of the day, do some of the overnight drive, get like 4 or 5 hours of sleep, wake up, do it again the next day. So, you know, it's really cool that I'm able that my job like understands and they're also supportive and everything, and that's like super cool. But also it's a lot being on tour, you know, and literally doing two full-time jobs simultaneously. So it's, you know, it can be a lot sometimes, but you know, it's again, it's one of those things where like it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I had a taste of that. I did my first ever tour of Europe back in November, and I work freelance and remotely anyway. So I've had my first case of that, fitting in work wherever you can while you're on the road at the mercy of spotty Eastern European Wi-Fi, which is
Yeah,
interesting.
we have like, a mobile hotspot that we just like have, because honestly, in action, like four of us are able to work remote while we're on tour.
Right,
So
okay.
there's a lot of drives where it's just like us working. So it's just like keyboards clicking and whatnot.
It's not rock and roll excess, it's work is going on.
Yeah, but then then at night we can hang out and stuff. So like that's cool. But yeah, it's a lot of and during the day, during normal business hours, it's a lot of actual just regular work stuff.
This is the price we pay, right?
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, all of our jobs let us do that. It's really cool.
Yeah,
You
it's a
know,
good good
like super
situation to
lucky.
be in.
Oh, absolutely. Because not everybody is, in that situation. So it's definitely one of the blessings that I count for sure. Like it is a huge aspect of my life that, I need, I like literally need that. So that's, it's pretty cool.
So let's talk about the album then, Hyper Focused, because up until this point, Wilmette has released like three EPs and a couple of singles, something like that.
Yeah, it's been a few EPs. And so this record is really cool, and we're really excited for it because it's gonna be great. I'm like really pumped. August 4th cannot come soon enough. I really can't wait for everyone to hear what what we worked on. It's a little different, but it's also very well met at the same time.
Yeah, because as we're talking now at the beginning of June, I think I'm going to probably put this out at the beginning of August, so it kind of coincides with the album release. But
Okay.
as we're talking now, there's two songs that are out at the moment, obviously the title track and also another track called Playing Dead. And yeah, like they Wilmette definitely has a sound. And it's somewhere between kind of pop punk and post-hardcore, would you say, or screamo, whatever. There's.
Yeah, I would definitely say actual post-hardcore and pop punk is definitely kind of, where we reside. This record, especially from what you can hear in the first two songs, it's like there's still like heavy elements to it. It gets kind of heavy-ish at times. But there's no like just straight up breakdowns on this record.
Right. Okay. Because I was going to say, like, the first two singles are more of the kind of on the melodic side of things. I was going to say,
Yeah.
is that a kind of conscious movement in that direction?
I think that when it was being written, there's actually a bunch of B-sides for this record. And I remember like having a conversation with Griffin and it kind of being like, well, we don't want to like lose the edge, but like we definitely want to give Aaron more freedom to just kind of shine, because Aaron is actually like a really good vocalist. So we just kind of, I know that like when things were being written, like was a very prevalent thought. So, I think that, if there are just little pockets of it being still, heavy and still like very well met-y, and it, I would say that like this record is very like dry, like very driving. There's all the songs have a lot of like forward momentum to them. So like once the song starts, like it really kind of like pushes forward and like towards the end of the song, which is kind of cool. I don't think that any of them feel very long. Like if you look at some of the old songs, like Winter Stay, for example, song is like 4 minutes long. I love that song. I was not a part of that song. That was like before my time, but it's long. And like there are times where I'm like, oh, there's still more parts of the song. You know, like I realize it as I'm listening to it or as we're playing it. I'm like, oh shit, we're only like halfway through the song right now. That typically does not happen with these new songs. And that, you know, that's not a dig at Winter Stay or anything. Like I do genuinely love that song. It's awesome and it's super fun to play. But it is just something where I feel like all of these songs are very cohesive, and like I said, all of these songs are a little bit, they just kind of drive, and there's not really any stops in the momentum of the song. And I think that's something that's really cool that, you know, was able to happen in the during the writing process.
It was something I was talking about with another one of my guests recently, was Metallica's new album, 72 Seasons, has got, I mean, it's like 10 tracks, but it's 77 minutes long because they're all about 6, 7 minutes long each. And I'm all for experimentation and kind of putting lots of things in there, but I just feel like sometimes not every song needs to be that long, and not every song needs to have so many technical bits in there. Sometimes you can be just punchy and tight,
Yeah, I would say that specifically like in pop punk, coming in right under 3 minutes or just about 3 minutes is probably the sweet spot. Just kind of being able to get in, get out, do what you got to do. Everyone's attention span is a lot lower now because of, you know, like TikTok and you know, social media and stuff. And so it's definitely something where it's just kind of like you want to put as much in there as possible without completely overstimulating or overloading, you know, the listener, but you want to keep their attention. So you definitely want interesting parts of the song, but then you also want something repetitive and infectious so that like it's stuck in their head. It's not just like, oh, I wrote a song with a bunch of cool parts anymore. You know, it's a lot of that thought goes into it. So you really want to, you know, make sure that you're writing for you and that you like it. But then you also want to make sure that like it doesn't suck. And like you're not just biased, you know?
Yeah.
So
So is that's a genuine thought process that's going on in your head? It's like you're thinking about the streaming audiences as well.
not like that's it's not like an afterthought, but it's not the priority either.
It's
You
just
know,
some it's just
I
in there somewhere.
it's just yeah, it's just kind of in there. Like it's something that like I would be remiss if like you know it wasn't something that we thought about or it wasn't something that was like prevalent. And it's definitely something that is relevant. And it has a place in the thought process, but it's not the most important thing because at the end of the day, you know, you got to write songs that you like and that you want to play and that you have fun playing, and you just got to hope other people like it.
Yeah. And I mean, I
And
don't see anything in particular wrong with writing to, not the algorithm, but like writing with streaming in mind, because that is where the majority of people listen to their stuff now. And yeah, if you don't get them hooked with that kind of punchy hook or chorus straight away, then they are going to skip past it. And I suppose really the live arena possibly is where you can do the slightly longer versions of these songs, or, do kind of in different arrangements of them, should I say?
yeah, I mean, you know, in live you can like add things or you can like rearrange things or do cool stuff, and that's always fun. I always like when bands do stuff like that, and it's the like the most th there's one that I talk about all the time with people, and like Florida Strong is one of my favorite bands, and you know, in like 2011 they put out In Some Way, Shape, or Form. Not everyone likes that record. I like that. Was it 11? No, it was like 2000. It was like 2013 or 14, maybe.
Oh, don't ask me.
2013 or 14.
Almost everything before the pandemic feels like it all
Yeah,
happened like
everything was just kind of
that.
whatever. Well, you know, suffice to say, not everybody likes In Some Way, Shape, or Form. I actually like it a lot. I think it's really cool. and they tried some new stuff, and it's got some really killer tracks on it. But the song Stuck in the Middle is like one of the only ones that they play live regularly off that record. And like there's like a real like quick little like breakdown section in the middle of the song. And live, they do it again at the end of the song. And it's really cool. And I always wish that they did it again at the end of the song in the recording. So every time they play it, I'm like, yeah. Like we're gonna hear it again. This is awesome. So doing stuff like that is cool. And you know, that's you know, making little changes and stuff, it's cool. And then like when people come up and say, you know, say stuff like, oh, you know, you changed this, like that was really cool or whatever. It's like, oh, okay, nice. Somebody caught it. Like that's
It's nice to hear that
validating.
from it means that they listen to it enough to know the songs first off, and then they've noticed the little differences that you've put in there. That's really cool. But I suppose as well, that's the thing that like separates, you know, the listening at home thing or on your phone or whatever to actually being there in the room experiencing it live with you guys as well. Like it's an extra little kind of bonus, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's definitely different for sure.
And so Hyperfocus was produced by Seth Henderson, right, of State Champs and Knuckle Puck. So like is it
Yes, and Real Friends.
right, I mean, are those bands that you guys kind of listened to before you met them anyway? Like were those, you know, were those bands kind of inspirations in a way or
Yeah, I mean, you know, being from where Knuckle Puck and Real Friends are from. You know, and like seeing them play a bunch of local shows back in the day before they kind of blew up, you know, definitely influenced the decision a little bit to go to Seth for sure. You know, and it's cool because, you know, like we know Seth sounds good. We know he's gonna make us sound good. So yeah, I definitely think that it, you know, it influenced the decision a little bit, but you know, at the end of the day, I think it's really important to not just go to a studio because somebody else recorded there or because it, you know, somebody you like is the, you know, producer, recording engineer. Like you gotta also think about like the project and like what is like is it does it make sense for the project? So one thing that's pretty cool about Seth is like he's very good at like vocal production, like helping kind of suss out like you know like little vocal melodies and like you know maybe just like oh let's rearrange this or let's do that. Like he definitely helps and he has a very good ear for stuff like that. He's got really good suggestions when it comes to like you know doing harmonies for a certain part or something like that. So it's pretty helpful in terms of doing stuff like that.
And so I suppose the other thing that you get from kind of working with people like Seth is possibly ways of doing things that you wouldn't otherwise have thought to do. I mean, how was it working for him? Did you kind of learn anything from him or any kind of technical things?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like I feel like every time, and honestly, at this point, all three bands have recorded with Seth, and it's something that is pretty cool because like now I know his workflow, and also, I mean, you know, conversely, he knows my workflow as well, and he knows how to extract the best takes out of me, whether it's you know, trying to get me to prove to him that I can do it, or you know, whether it's like positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, what you know, whatever I need at the time. Like he's very good at getting the best out of us in general, and so that's something that's important, and that's something that's you know, pretty invaluable in that relationship there.
I think that's the main thing for a producer from my limited kind of working with people who do producing full time. It's like they're not there just to press record or set up the mics or whatever. They're there to try and see something that you as a band might not be able to see in your performance anyway, and try and bring that out of you for a better final product.
Right. And then that's the difference between a recording engineer and a producer. Like a recording engineer, you know, they have all the technical knowledge. They're just there to, you know, literally make sure the takes are good, and just kind of, press record. In terms of, being a producer, like a lot of people, a lot of producers are also recording engineers, but not all recording engineers are producers.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it.
Absolutely. And so was there there's going to be 10 tracks on the album Hyperfocus. Was it always going to be 10 tracks, or was it these 10 tracks are the ones that hang together that have got the best ideas in them? What was the process there?
Yeah, I definitely think that these 10 are the best that fit together. They're the most cohesive. They're the ones that we felt are the best representation of where we're at right now. So, these are definitely the ones that, we were most excited to share. Like I said, there's a good amount of B-sides and other songs that are just, didn't make the cut, that we didn't like finish like hashing or fleshing out. But that's kind of how it always is. And I'm sure some of them will, get reworked into other things, or some of them will be cannibalized, and we'll take riffs or chord progressions from those and, turn them into completely new songs. Or maybe some of them will just finish writing and we'll, release later or something. Like it's always like a very fluid situation when it comes to writing a record. It's very rarely like, all right, well, this is the record. These are the exact 10 songs that we wrote when we thought of this record, and that's all we got. It's almost never like that.
Yeah. And there's always, I always think that in any kind of any song that you write, there's always at least one thing that if the whole song doesn't work, there'll be a riff, or there'll be a set of lyrics, or even a vocal melody that can be used elsewhere. There's always something that
Yeah.
you can take away. It's never a lost endeavor, should we say.
Yeah, there's usually always something good in there's always at least one thing that's good in everything.
So, how long did the album take to record, and where did you record it?
So we recorded it at Always Be Genius, Seth's studio in Crown Point, Indiana. We recorded it in about 2.5 weeks. So like we don't typically record on weekends. So it was like I think like 15 days of or like 15 or 16 days of tracking. And yeah, I mean it was nice. We got a lot of it done. Griffin is also producer slash recording engineer, so we were able to do a lot of really good pre-production with him. So a lot of it was instrumentally like taken care of and kind of fleshed out, and we just kind of went in there and messed around with some ideas and kind of again fleshed things out a little bit more than they were before. But for the most part, we went in kind of knowing which songs we liked the best, and then just kind of talked and drew out like a plan and a map. And then, we just, this is, Hyperfocus is what we came out the other end with.
And do you prefer playing live or recording, or is it just different levels of interest in both? Because I know some people just prefer playing live, they hate recording, and the other way around.
Yeah, they're both very different. They're different animals completely. One thing I love about recording is that I can dial in exactly the perfect tone that I want for the part. And then like, there's something really cool about recording all the individual parts, and then like, that first listen through of the entire song where like it's really kind of even like pre-mixing, like just that first rough mix of it where everything is like, oh, this is cool, like it sounds like it did in my head, or this is cool, it doesn't sound like it did in my head, it sounds better or just different, so that's great. But then there's also, playing live is crazy because it's an experience that you're sharing with these four other people or three other people, depending. And you have to be very locked in. It's a very symbiotic relationship, and there's a lot of natural chemistry that has to be there. And when it works, it's pretty incredible. There could be parts that are, harder to play, and you practice and practice and practice, and then you're playing it during the set and you nail it and you're just like amped and you're like, yeah, like we did that. Like it's cool. It's really cool. So
There is like this flow state that you can get into sometimes, and the whole band can almost like focus in or like tune into a frequency with each other, I feel like. And it's like when everyone's operating on the same level, it's almost like you can't play a wrong note, even if things are not going, to plan, which they invariably don't always go to plan live.
they
But
almost never go to plan live. They almost never go to plan live, ever. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's cool because, like, even if somebody plays like an off note or something, something that I say a lot is, man, I fucked up during whatever, but then it's okay because I fucked up in time. So, like, a lot of people might not like realize that there was a mistake, or maybe they'll just say, oh, that was a creative liberty. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to do at that point in time. And that's it for sure.
I'm gonna remember
We'll go with that one.
creative. Yeah, I'm gonna remember
Yeah,
that phrase.
we'll go with that one for sure.
That's great. Because one of the things that I've over the last few years I've started to hone in on is like, as much as I know what I should have been playing in that moment, not a lot of other people else there do. Like they don't necessarily know. And like you say, as long as you're kind of in time and you don't even have to style it out all that well. Like people are much more forgiving in the live space
Well,
than I am to myself. Let's put it that way.
there will be times where I'll listen to something that was recorded and I'm like, oh my God, that's a bad take. I got to redo it. But if in the moment listening to it, it sounded fine. And you don't really, like recording is, it's very, it really shows all your inadequacies. Like it's ruthless. But playing live, like it's just kind of like you're in the moment, you're going through it, and it's just like get to the next part, get to the next part. And it's like that to watch the show and stuff too. So most of the time, mistakes are totally passable.
And I mean, playing live as much as you do, I mean, are there any specific gigs that stick in your head as particularly memorable? Like maybe it was the venue itself, maybe it was the crowd, maybe it was technical malfunctions,
Yeah, probably one of the best and most fun gigs I played was our first show after COVID, and I think it was just because it was just so important to us as a band. It was actually cool. I did double duty. I played two sets that night. Action Adventure also played that show. It was Real Friends, Action Adventure, Wilmette, and then a band called Mudicolor. And it was at home and it was sold out, and it was at a 750 cap venue, so it was like 750 kids there, and just the crowd reaction for everyone was just so pumped to have music back. Everyone was so excited to hear these all the band's songs live. And honestly, I played two really good sets, and I like remember I was like, wow, like I'm pretty excited right now. I remember getting through the Wilmette set and I was like, all right, I got through that one. That was really fun. I'm tired, but like, let's get through this next one. And then we got through that. And I was like, this is great. I just played two really relatively clean sets, especially for not having played a show in, almost 2 years. And it was like, it was just it was a big moment. It was a really important moment for us as a band as well, because I think it was only like the third time I'd ever played a show with Wilmette because of
Right, of course, yeah.
the circumstances, and so it was a big deal for us, and like that was really cool. And it was the moment where, at least for me, I was like, cool, this works. Like, we work as a unit. This is very good, you know. So we can write all we want. We can hang out and be friends and stuff all we want. But, you know, it's a whole different thing getting up on stage and actually, like, doing it.
Have you noticed a change in audiences since COVID from before? I feel like for a little while, like directly after COVID, there was a lot of fervor. And then for a bit, audiences went a bit kind of almost lack of attention. Like they'd pay attention for the first couple of songs, and then it seemed like people would drift off a little bit. And now it feels like everyone has kind of got on board with it again, especially like around the areas that I play anyway. It seems like there's a better scene now because people remember what it was like not to be able to go out, I guess.
I can definitely see that. I think that it also is that attention span thing. You got to keep their attention live. You got to perform. It's not just like standing up there and playing the song. Like, you have to perform. You have to be interesting to watch. And so, you know, that's a whole thing, that there's a whole other aspect to the live show that people don't always think about.
Yeah, I mean, is that something that your bands think about that in like rehearsals and stuff?
Yeah, definitely. It's something that has been more on my mind recently. Production is a very important part of the performance. So, you know, just getting like those transitions in between songs down, like making sure like the banter makes sense. So, you know, your vocalist is talking to the crowd and making sure that it's like that the banter hits, you know, making sure that it's good. And that it's, you know, it's not just you rambling for X amount of time for no reason. You know, that's all important, and that's something that gets brought up for sure.
Yeah, I know I've been, because I sing and play bass at the same time in one band, and then I just play bass in a couple of others and do backup vocals. But I have also been guilty of rambling for no reason during so between songs. And not having a point. It's something that I'm working on at the moment, is just like trying to be like, right, what do I need to say? What do I have? Like, is there anything I should be saying, or should I just get on with the song?
I mean, you know, it definitely happens to the best of us. So, I mean, you know, it's a learned thing. I mean, every time like we go on tour, there's a learning curve for the banter every night for the set. You know, and then after a couple of shows, you know, everything locks in, and you know, you just get into a rhythm, and then like, you know, by the end of it, you're just like, you know exactly what it is. There are certain cues, you know exactly when to start the song, you know exactly, you know. So it's, you know, it's it all just depends.
And does it depend on the, you know, the audience that's out there as well? Because there's some big bands that you've supported. Do you tune the performance or the between song banter? Is it kind of toned down or toned up? Like, what do you do in those situations?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to know kind of the demographic of the show that you're playing, and then you just want to make sure that you are saying things that are going to hit with them. So, you know, it depends. Like, if we're playing with real friends, there's a lot of people a little younger than me that would listen to it, but not like too much younger, and a lot of people my age. So a lot of stuff would be things that I would talk about with people, you know, in my, you know, age range. Playing with Newfound Glory, everyone is my age or a little bit older. So, you know, I can make jokes about being an old guy now, or feeling older, or whatever. And I mean, I don't feel like I'm that old, but like,
No.
you know, like being an older guy in the scene, and like, you know, oh, I remember when whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, stuff like that. So,
Being able to mosh before my knees gave out, that kind of thing.
yeah, that's a real thing. That's a real thing.
So, what's on the agenda then for the rest of the year for Wilmette, for example? Obviously, you've got to juggle your tours with your other bands. So, what's the plan? Is it obviously your album comes out August the 4th, and then
Yes.
what?
After that, we're trying to, get like a nice album release show going at home. We're also trying to get some tours and stuff going. There's some stuff in the works for sure that I, can't really talk about too much yet, but there's definitely, some things in the works that we're working on. I mean, we got two more music videos coming out before the record comes out, which is pretty cool. So, just a lot of the regular kind of run-of-the-mill stuff, but we're definitely, trying to get out there and, get at least one run in before the end of the year, just to have everything to be able to support the record. And, we'll have like, I mean, technically they have 4 months. I have the month of August and,
Little bit of
November and
September.
December. We'll make it work. And it's like I said, it's a little Tetrisy, but it's definitely getting sorted and we're working on it.
And I suppose the last thing, obviously, where can we find Wilmette online? We'll do the social links and all that now. Where can we find you online?
Yeah, I mean we're on everything. Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, literally wherever you like YouTube Music, YouTube, anywhere that you can listen to any other band, you can find us there. We're very, very accessible, very easy to find. We're also on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We don't really tweet that much. We should probably start doing a little bit more, but we honestly we've spent a lot of time like working on this record, and now that it's starting to roll out, we can kind of do the go back to normal being ridiculous on the internet kind of life. Yeah, instead of just like writing and making sure that like everything is getting done. But yeah, I mean we're pretty much everywhere, all social media, all streaming platforms. If it's out there and it's a major platform, we're on it.
Fair play. And finally, like, what are you listening to right now? Like, are there any bands that you can point out from your local scene that, we should be listening to and possibly people to look out for in the future?
Oh, from the local scene.
Maybe.
Okay. For sure. Yeah, there's a lot of bands locally that are doing some pretty cool things. There's this band in the DIY scene called Scarlet D'Amour. They don't have a lot of music on streaming right now, but their shows look like they're going crazy and they're really, really cool. There's Fluorescence and Four Stars are two other bands that are doing, pretty big things. I just went to they just played a show together last weekend at a venue in Cobra Lounge, and it was packed. It was awesome. So, that's really cool. Another band is Highwire. They've got a show this weekend coming up, which I'm pretty excited to go to. And I mean, they're doing great things. They released two EPs that are like halves of a whole LP over kind of COVID time. So like 21 and 22, I think they released them in. And it's a great record, or two great records, I guess. Fantastic. Our scene is really doing some pretty cool things. There's also other bands like Milwaukee is not super far away from us, so there's a lot of cool stuff going on up in Milwaukee. And a band called Honey Creek from up there is great. They're, really close friends of mine, and they're doing just awesome stuff. They've been rolling out singles. They rolled out a single earlier this year. They have another single coming out like in a couple of weeks. It's pretty cool. So it's a lot of cool stuff going on in like the northern Midwest area, the Chicago and Milwaukee scenes. Lots of cool things happening.
I've always heard good things about that area of the world, so it's always good to get someone's point of view who's from there,
Yeah, music-wise, it's great. Our weather kind of sucks,
You're talking
but
to
like,
a British person, it's fine.
yeah, it's cold and raining there most of the time too, so
Although
I get it.
both of us are bathed in sunlight at the moment, so that's a good thing.
It is. It is. It's rare, but it's good. I'm
Cool.
digging it.
Well, Brompton, thank you so much. I'll let you get out and actually enjoy that sunshine in that case. Thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been a real blast getting to know you and hearing about the record making process and the touring life as well.
Yeah, for sure. No problem. Thanks for having me.
There you go. What a lovely guy Brompton is. I hope you enjoyed listening to that chat as much as I did having it. We stayed on the call for a little bit afterwards as well, which is always a great sign that we got on and wanted the conversation to continue. Again, you can follow Will Met on all the social platforms at Will Met Band, and you can listen to or watch them wherever you get your music. The album's out now, so what are you waiting for? Go and check it out. Thank you very much for listening, especially to the hardcore among you who listen all the way to the end. Please do share this show with people and leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. But more than anything else, look after yourselves. See you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Band Biographies. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for Band Biographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. See you next time.